From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 722, Remote Support with guest Jessica Dean, recorded Monday, August 10th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brendan. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I've got a chance to talk to Jessica Dean again, who is a cloud developer advocate for Microsoft focused on Azure, containers, cloud, open source, and of course, DevOps. And prior to joining Microsoft, she spent over a decade as an IT consultant and system administrator to various corporate and enterprise environments catering to end users and IT professionals in the San Francisco Bay Area. And as we were saying just before we started this conversation, then you moved to Florida and kept customers in California. So 3-hour time difference, and you just can't pop by the office anymore.
Mm-hmm. That was very, very true.
Yeah. So, and now we're all kind of in that situation. If you still got everybody working from home and you're trying to provide support to people, like you can't pop by their desk anymore. And they really don't want you to either.
No, depending on where you live in the world, obviously the COVID rates and numbers, at least in, I live in California, they have not been going down whatsoever, and not in the United States. So no one really wants to be near someone else. We want that 6-foot distance. And personally, I don't know anyone that actually wants to go into the office here.
I'm in Vancouver, and we used to be the shining example of how to do this right. But summer came and everybody got a little more relaxed and the numbers have bounced. And like this virus isn't over. You know, I think the U.S. is having a particularly difficult time, but everybody's bounced a little.
Yes.
You know, it's not over.
And I don't think the virus is even close to being over personally.
No, I tend to
think that this is going to be our new normal for quite some time. And, mm-hmm. and possibly this is going to be our shift left in how we support events and customers and end users alike. This is a really transitional time, I think, for anyone in the tech industry.
It does feel like there's a sort of genie out of the bottle, too. I mean, there's lots of organizations that said, we don't want people for working from home. We're not going to do that. And then they had to. And now that they mm-hmm. have, you kind of can't go back.
I think that's one of the things that a lot of tech companies are struggling with, because I know certain companies had said that we'll support work from home indefinitely, mm-hmm. forever. And then other companies said, okay, well, we'll support work from home until 2021. It's Microsoft's guidance.
Right.
And my team, the team that I work on, has always been remote. So yeah. I'm unaffected by that policy. But I will say it's interesting also from a employee perspective and an individual perspective, because not every person thought that they could actually work remotely. I accepted the job I had because I knew that I could.
Right. You'd done it before.
However, I've done it before, and I've done it before in several different capacities, even mm-hmm. consulting for myself. But also, I guess I just knew that that's the way that my brain works. I actually feel when I'm more effective when I can have that one-on-one conversation with whoever I'm having a meeting with that day, or whatever customer I'm talking to, or webinar I'm participating in. I know that I can be more attentive without external distractions.
Right.
But I would talk to other coworkers and colleagues that did not work for Microsoft or did not work for my team, and they needed that interpersonal connection. I remember distinctly having several conversations with individuals saying, don't you miss that interaction? Don't you miss that social communication? Or how do you help somebody without physically being there? And I think everyone has surprised themselves, both employers thinking that they would never support work from home, and employees thinking that they would never be a good fit for a remote position.
And I do think part of this is, do you have a space that you can actually work in at home? And, you know, folks with small children, you know, people that live in a house with multiple roommates, or just in an environment where you don't have that quiet space to work, it's got to be very challenging.
It is. And I mean, I can speak on some aspect of that, because while I've had a home office for a decade at this point, I've always had a place to work. Mm-hmm. I am in the process of moving right now. So I actually sold my house. I do not have a home office.
Congratulations.
I am now working in a living room. My partner and I both bought a house together and we're slowly moving in.
So definitely congratulations.
Yes. Thank you for that. However, it's been an adjustment trying to figure out how to do videos, how to do podcasts. Mm-hmm. I schedule all my calls now on the front half of the week, because come Wednesday, we do have kids.
Right.
And I've been my partner's actually a first responder and is on the front lines. So she's still having to go into work.
Oh my goodness.
There is no break in COVID for that. So I'm now juggling remote and handling COVID school and kids. Mm-hmm. And I want a snack every 5 minutes. It's been very interesting.
And is she 4 days on, 4 days off? Like, what's her work model's really intense, right?
So it changed in COVID. And that has also been a very interesting shift. She's a deputy, so she's in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And she actually used to work in the coroner's bureau. So she was actually even going out doing death investigation and body removals.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
I don't think anyone knew firsthand just how real COVID was, other than I would get my numbers direct from, especially for our county, direct from her. I mean, we had the real data there.
Right.
However, due to budget cuts, due to hours changing, demands with COVID, her position got cut at the Coroner's Bureau, which was normally 3 or 4 days, nights actually on. So she would still be able to be here for part of the week, would still be able to help with the kids. She'd sleep during the day and go into work at night, but it was actually a little bit more flexible in that sense. So when she got switched, she's now at a position that is 8-hour shifts, 5 days a week. And her agency also has mandatory overtime.
Wow.
So even today, she went into work at 7 or 8 a.m. and she's going to do her overtime shift after. She won't be home until close to midnight. So she'll do a 16 to 18 hour shift today.
So, I mean, I hope you'll pass along to her from me and probably most of the listeners here, like, thanks for your service. She's still fighting the fight while we're all trying to just get along with working in this new world. But she's literally on the front lines of the pandemic.
She is. And the hard part is she's actually had two exposures to COVID where she's had to then take time off work. She's had two tests, which I have not had one yet. But from what I've heard, it feels like they tickle your brain with the swab.
Oh, it's the biggest Q-tip you've ever seen.
It is. But the hard part was, so in the middle of this transitional period, because I still record videos that would be on camera, I actually rented a temporary office where I do have all of my equipment that'll go into when I have to.
Right.
And there was one event at the end of July that I was supposed to go in and record a high-end pre-record video for a conference, and she had a COVID scare and I couldn't leave the house.
Yeah.
I mean, which is fine. I didn't want to leave the house, right? Like, I don't want to expose anyone else. So we took extra precautions where we had groceries delivered. Mm-hmm. I remember we wanted to check the oxygen in her blood,
right,
for medical advice.
Vioxin.
So I had the oxygen sensor that puts on the finger, I had that delivered, left outside the door, trying to use any local services. Like, we did not leave our house for a week until she got her results.
Nice.
And that adjusted my work schedule, because now I have a partner who's home, who's not feeling well. We have a 20-year-old son who lives with us full time. Any noise, video games in the background, I really had to adjust my recording and my even meeting set up for that entire week. That was very interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. And it's a ton of empathy to just understand all of the emotions that are going on in this thing, and to be able to be flexible enough when things change like this.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the ways that I've also kind of tried to think of everything, even in our job and I say our job, meaning advocacy events, talking to people, but then also on the other end, because I've also been that engineer. I've done help desk. I've done consulting. I've done tech support. I've sat on product meeting calls or product support. I mean, any of those conversations when you're still talking to somebody else on the other end where you don't know what they're going through. Right. You don't know the external stresses. You don't know. I mean, especially right now, anyone with kids,
they're in a state.
I give everyone so much credit.
Sure.
And so much, I mean, leeway. I don't know how you stay mentally on track when you're constantly, you're doing two jobs.
Yeah, at least.
Right. Yeah. You're at least two jobs. Mm-hmm. You're, I mean, and especially if you have kids in different grades, now that's almost like two jobs right there, plus your own job. I really try to consider the other person on the other end and the experiences they're going through. I know that I've had coworkers who have been affected by COVID, whether directly or personally or indirectly being a family member. They've been affected by quarantine, by schools. We're all in this together. Mm-hmm. We're not getting out of it anytime soon. And it's, I think empathy is probably one of the biggest tools to have in any employees. I don't care what industry people are in, but empathy is the biggest tool to have in any person's toolbox right now.
And nobody contacts you if they aren't at least a little frustrated. You have to get to that point of saying, I need help. And that generally comes with, you know, a certain level of anxiety on top of everything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, because there's always that anxiety, especially from an engineer support perspective, where everyone is stressed and possibly distracted, and we still want to help. But now, if you have not worked remotely previously, the challenge and the question internally, at least even for me, is always that imposter syndrome of what if I can't fix it?
Yes.
What if I can't help? What if I get the answer wrong?
Yeah.
What if I don't know the answer? I mean, depending on who's listening, if you work for an employer and your salary and you can sit there and help for several hours, that's great. But if you are an IT consultant, as I used to be pre-Microsoft, and you haven't worked remotely before, and you're supporting clients on a break-fix model, now there's extra pressure of how do I do this and still keep the billable hours at a fair and reasonable rate when I'm sitting here struggling, trying to figure out what the solution is.
Yeah, and I think it's an unreasonable expectation on yourself that they say something and you immediately know the answer. Like, you're allowed to Google. You should be searching out for the, you know, fastest path. But you also, you know, I think we devalue our own Google skills. Like, I've had a regular mortal looking over my shoulder as we searched on something. He's like, I can't believe how you search. Like, where do you think of all of these words and so forth? We take for granted because we've done it for so long that searching efficiently. But lots of folks aren't good at it. It's a skill.
It is, and I mean, even I hadn't kind of considered that. But I think any clients that I had worked with I've been in this industry now for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And after a certain point, I think most of the clients, because I stopped accepting new clients, I just had great relationships with the clients that I had. Mm-hmm. They all knew me. Like, they finally realized that I'm good at technology, but I'm not psychic. Technology is changing so rapidly.
Yes.
I don't just get an update downloaded to my brain to where I know the answer. And so I'd search on Google, or I also was I was a certified Apple technician. I actually joke that I had more Apple certifications than I do Microsoft.
Nice.
And it's still true to this day. I have like 4 plus Apple certifications, and Microsoft, I think I had Windows 7 and Azure. There's that. However, even for a lot of my searching, I wouldn't go directly to Google. I'd go to Apple knowledge base articles and search for either on knowledge base articles or on forums and figure out if this is a known issue. And then kind of figure out, okay, well, this is a known issue. There isn't an active fix. However, here are the workarounds we could do. I will either happily help you with the workarounds when you need it or write it down. But at least even through like a virtual conversation, whether you're doing a screen sharing or however you're providing that support, I think it also helps the other person on the other end to visualize that, hey, you're also human. You also need to look these things up. Other people are also human, experiencing the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's also that comfort level when they can read that other people on the internet are feeling their same pain. There's almost like that empathy, that comfort.
That instant validation is like, I'm not insane. This is a problem.
Yeah, that I'm not insane, I think, is very important. I think of even when I've had trouble with not necessarily technology, but my car. I took my car into the dealership a few weeks ago, actually. And there's like a loose screw that's rolling around in the hatch, and it's been rolling around for probably 6 months.
Oh.
So I finally figured I'm going to go take the car in, and I'm going to tell them to take a look at the hatch and figure out the screw. So I get out and I'm like lifting the back of the hatch repeatedly. And I'm like, it makes this sound, and it sounds like I felt like I was trying to play Pictionary with the service advisor. And he's looking at me like, I don't hear anything. Yeah. You're crazy. And I can't, I need the sound to be loud enough because we're still 6 feet away. And I'm like over here waving my hatch.
Right.
It didn't work.
Of course it did.
And guess what sound came back this weekend?
Yeah, the screw falls loose again. Now that nobody's listening except you.
Exactly. So that validation, I think, for customers even, to know that they're not crazy, to know that you can recreate the issue, and to know that other people have experienced it, I think that's another way to kind of get people to calm down, make people feel understood.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big one, making people feel understood and heard.
I do feel, both regardless of which seat I'm sitting in, as the supporter or the one needing support, working on reproducibility, like if I'm the supporter and someone's trying to reproduce something, I immediately give them more credit in the sense of they're thinking through the problem rationally.
Uh-huh.
They're not just, you know, it's broken, fix it, but rather there's this thing and I'm trying to recreate it for you. And it's like, okay, good. Mm-hmm. You know, you're thinking in a very rational way. And by the same token.
Well, it's a very logical way too, sure. Right? It's very much like, I'm going to recreate this. I'm going to see the problem, and then I'm going to see the steps that you take to make that problem occur, mm-hmm. make sure that there isn't additional steps that we're not considering, so that way we can actually solve the root of the problem.
Right. And it's the funny thing is, it's all diagnostics, right? Once we get a reproducible thing, we have a sense of what it is, we could probably fix it. But getting to mm-hmm. that point is hard work, and it's frustrating for a lot of people.
It is. And that's where I think also having patience is a necessity anytime mm-hmm. you work in technology,
yeah.
just in general. But I think even right now, in the middle of quarantine, in the middle of COVID 2020, I think really having an additional level of patience for all the reasons previously mentioned, understanding we don't know any of the external factors in anyone's life.
No.
Having that additional level of patience, I think, is really important when it comes to that diagnostics, finding solutions, and being able to implement those solutions, right? Because, I mean, certain solutions can be immediate. Others require time.
Yeah.
And it's not everything is a one-click fix.
Without a doubt. And Jessica, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message.
Remote support is a necessary evil. But what if you could save time, money, and effort by preventing the support request in the first place? Don't be the IT admin who could have done something, but didn't. Prevent support requests and eliminate business continuity problems at the source by using PolicyPack on your remote work Windows 10 machines. With PolicyPack, you get the power to manage applications and browsers on Windows 10, overcome application UAC prompts, block unknownware, dynamically configure the Windows 10 start screen, taskbar, and file associations. PolicyPack works alongside Group Policy, Intune, or any remote management tool, so you already have all you need. Installation is a single MSI installer, and you're done. You're ready to keep your machines managed, secure, and automatically protected. Learn how thousands of other administrators enhance their management of on-premises and remote work Windows 10 machines with PolicyPack. Come to policypack.com/remotework. That's policypack.com/remotework. Policy Pack, securing your standards.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell, and that's Jessica Dean, cloud developer advocate and longtime IT person, providing support in many different ways. Of course, there is all the tropes of the obnoxious IT person. But with everyone remote, do you change your tooling at all? Like, it's hard to do support purely over the phone. Do we really need to get into screen capture stuff or you know, remote access stuff for work from home folks? Is that essential?
I think it depends on the individual, and mm-hmm. it depends on both the person being supported and the person doing the support. Right. If you are the person administering support, if you're a visual person, which for example I am, mm-hmm. there's certain things that if somebody is explaining something to me, I can kind of visualize it and understand the problem, especially if I've seen it before, because then I have that picture reference in my brain. But if you're describing something to me and I've never seen that issue before, chances are I'm going to want to see it. I'm going to want to see the behavior. I mean, I think of even conversations I've had recently, since I'm pretty big in Kubernetes and microservice community or abstracted services, distributed systems communities. When somebody will say that they're having a problem and their pods are failing or they're getting errors, I want to immediately hop onto a Teams call. I want to see their screen. I will probably request control of their mouse. I'll start typing in their terminal.
Right.
Like, I want to go hands-on. But that's my way of supporting, and that's my way of really digging down into the problem, because that's also the same way I would triage and troubleshoot my own setup.
Yeah.
However, certain people might be good with an auditory experience as far as just hearing the problem. They already know the issue. They can walk somebody through, oh, you're going to click here, you're going to type in this command, you're going to do this. You can go into the web portal, like whatever the description is. Some people can do that. I do think that having that video meeting is still also an additional added sense of value.
Right.
It either gives that additional level of comfort, especially when you're having maybe just even remote meetings. Maybe it's not support, but maybe it's a touch base to make sure we're on the same page with our support team or our staff. Having that face to face through a camera, I think still could be valuable. So I think it kind of depends.
That's an interesting point too. This is one thing to do a screen share so you can control the machine and see what they're doing, but to be able to see each other, because we started this conversation on empathy. It's like remote empathy is hard.
Mm-hmm. So I think seeing somebody's facial expressions, seeing somebody's body language, seeing somebody still get excited. One of the things that I started doing right when COVID hit, was start creating more YouTube content.
Right.
And for anyone who is listening who already knows who I am or has seen my YouTube content and has seen that there hasn't been anything recent, I'm aware. I apologize. as you've heard, there's been some external factors, and I'm working on stepping that back up. However, one of the things I would do in all my videos, and I think I did it in all but one, and the only video that I didn't have a camera, is a video that I actually recorded the screen share from my iPad. And there was a very specific reason why I was using the iPad for that video. However, every other video has my face.
Right.
And I would even do certain transitions where if I'm showing you something on the screen, I'll usually make my face non-existent because I don't want you looking at my face during that moment. I want you looking at whatever I'm trying to teach or show or demonstrate. However, if I'm talking to you and I'm looking at the camera as I'm explaining what this technical concept is, I'll make the screen go away and then I'll bring in my face to full view so that it's like we're having this conversation.
Right.
I want it to be interactive. And I believe that that's the same thing that we can approach remote support, is try to have them as interactive of an experience as possible.
I also think that as soon as you see each other, like, it's easier to shout at a disembodied voice than it is to shout at another person.
Absolutely.
Like, you are definitely de-escalating anxiety when you can see them, they can see you, and it's like, we're going to figure this out. You know, you can convey that confidence.
Absolutely. And I think there's things you can do even with your body language where you can see the facial expressions. You can see if something you said caused additional heightened anxiety,
right,
or if the shoulders relax back and fall back and the person's face kind of exhales, and you can really kind of make sure that the person on the other end is hearing you.
Yeah.
And I think there's a difference between you can hear that somebody's talking, but are you genuinely absorbing their words? And if you're trying to explain something from a technical nature, you want to make sure that they're actually actively listening, that it's not just passively nodding.
Yeah. And that you're affecting them, like you are talking them down and getting them to work, think through the problem and understand where things are at. Yeah. I would argue the face is almost more important than the remote control per se.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but definitely you're going to de-escalate the problem or at least be sensitive to what's upsetting people. Cause I think you get into terminology problems often, right? We use words that are different from our users, the way they describe things. You can go around in circles for a long time getting hung up on the glossary.
Absolutely. And I think that's another thing when I, so pre-Microsoft, I've been at Microsoft now for about 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I worked for a medical device company that was offering support. And some of our clients were in various parts of the country. And prior to that, I was a private consultant. Mm-hmm. And I had moved to Florida for a year. And all of my clients were in California. And crazy. I would fly out once a month to California. Mm-hmm. But every other day of the week, I was doing support from 3,000 miles away and 3 hours of a time difference.
Yeah.
And one of the things I had to learn was that throw the glossary out, throw the terminology out. Because when you're talking to people, everyone has their own way of describing whatever the button is or the icon on the screen is or whatever the, I don't know, problem is doing, whatever that flashing blinky, we all call it different things.
Right.
And I've even seen in Microsoft, Internet Explorer, Edge, whatever you want to call it, you have the stacked bars in the top right. And I've heard people call it a hamburger, or I've heard them call it stacked bars, or for the Wi-Fi symbol, call it an upside down pyramid. Or we all use different ways to describe whatever that is. And I've learned to try to hear what the other person is thinking and think of what they could be describing, how they're interpreting it. Mm-hmm. So rather than, especially when you're the person giving support, rather than forcing the person being supported to speak your proper terminology, and I'm using air quotes on that.
Yeah, I appreciate that gesture, because you can get really unnecessarily anal around terminology. And I feel like you're just,
yeah.
If you talk about talking down to people, it's like, you said that wrong, say it like this again, and then I'll answer you. Like, what are you doing?
Well, and then that's not operating with what we first started the conversation with, which was empathy.
Right.
Having sympathy to where the other person on the other end of the phone is, and also understanding that we're all individuals. We're not all operating with the same textbook in front of us.
Yeah.
And if the person we're supporting is not technically inclined and they're genuinely looking for support and they have this anxiety, you're not going to help them relax by forcing them to speak a different language that they don't understand. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest things I learned was not caring about the terminology anymore. Yeah. And just understanding and trying to picture what it is that they're describing.
Yeah.
And when I started doing that, my entire ability to support changed and shifted. I felt I was more effective. I was actually solving problems at a faster rate because I didn't care anymore about my laundry list of the way that you're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. Instead, I genuinely and actively listened to the problem that the other person was experiencing. And I could hear them from what they were not only describing, but feeling for the first time, because I wasn't thinking about my way of saying things or my way of describing it or handling it.
Right. Yeah. That, again, you talk about the ultimate level of empathy. It's like you're putting yourself in their shoes and then using their language. That's very powerful, like in terms of just A, calming them down, but B, really grasping the situation and empowering them that maybe they'll be able to solve the problem themselves next time around.
Exactly. And that's one of the ways that I think you build confidence in general. With humans in general, is you give them praise for trying, for actually solving it. You don't sit there and nitpick the things that they could have done differently.
Right.
The fact is that they still were able to describe the problem. Together, you were able to find a resolution. And if you can give them or empower them with enough confidence and anxiety reducing conversation, then they might be empowered to go solve it again on their own. Because I think the biggest thing I would ever hear from clients is, what if I break it?
Yeah.
What if I mess it up? And I'm like, but everything broken can be fixed. Yes. I break things all the time. I have broken so many Kubernetes clusters, Helm charts. Like, I break things all the time. So don't be afraid of breaking it.
Sure. It's just electrons. We can rearrange them again.
We can rearrange them. We can put them into a different configuration. Yeah. We can remove that semicolon that isn't supposed to be in the code. Like, it's not the end of the world.
It's not that big of a deal. It's okay. And I think people get too much anxiety around that because they are afraid. It's very rare to actually break things. It's not unprecedented, but it's so rare Like, they really shouldn't be thinking about it.
Well, and in my mind, nothing is ever broken to the point of no return.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certain things might not be cost effective to repair at this point because it's too old, but it's not that it can't be fixed. It just matters, do you want to spend the money to fix it?
Well, and data can be lost.
Data can be lost, yes. That's another thing that I think I usually try or had tried with my clients to remind them the value of disaster recovery, the mm-hmm. value of really planning ahead and trying to be as proactive as possible. So making sure that if your data is lost, that there's a backup somewhere.
Yeah.
You use some sort of backup and disaster data recovery solution. But data can be lost. There is also data recovery that can find some of the data, and sometimes it can't, depending on how bad the drive is. But then again, that also goes into cost, and do you want to spend the money to try to recover this data?
Sure. What makes sense? Well, these also points where it's like, hey, we could re-enter this from its source, like it's regenerable mm-hmm. in other ways too. But I think it's also how we become more friendly as IT folks. It's like, you know, I'm part of my job is to make sure you can't lose data. Which is why I have these various procedures and the reason I want you to store data here is I always have a backup taken care of for you.
Yes.
You know, don't put it on your local drive, stick it in the OneDrive. That's going to protect it. We have a way back if something goes wrong.
Yep.
You know, that opportunity to show as an asset to them, not just an annoyance, is I think pretty powerful as well.
And I think even like assuming that depending on how, again, you do your model for supporting clients, but if you give them access to a OneDrive or Google Drive mm-hmm. or iCloud Drive or whatever cloud storage you're using, is making sure that they still have access to that, where you're not the bottleneck. You're not the obstacle that they're having to get through to get that document that they accidentally deleted and threw in the trash.
Yep.
Or that their hard drive legitimately crashed, or they got ransomware, or whatever the problem was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of those things happen. And yeah.
And we're all human, right? Like, we've all done it. I've lost data before. Sure. I've had fallen or I guess broken hard drives, failing hard drives. And I've had to go back and recover from my own backup. So I think the other thing is, it's also when data is involved in particular, that is a very emotional conversation.
Sure.
And that's where I think I go back to that empathy. Like, I really became a much more effective engineer when I started really genuinely understanding that everyone who's in technology, especially now in COVID, because you have teachers now, you have parents now, mm-hmm. you have people that are trying to do things with technology that they've never done before. This is a very emotional experience. And especially when data gets in and they lose their data, they could have pictures of family members who are no longer around, or animals who passed away, and tears get involved. Like,
yeah,
when you start really connecting and relating and being able to put yourself in their shoes, as we've talked about, I think that also helps that conversation, and realizing that we're all human. We've all done it, whether we're good with technology, whether we're not good with technology. And it's just, it's going to be okay. We're going to try to get through this as best we can together.
Yeah. No, I think it's powerful to be able to grab them that way and hopefully actually be able to help them too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's our job also, as we've talked about, is whether we're IT support, whether we're systems engineers, operators, however we're doing our job, we always should be considering that end goal, right?
Yeah.
We always should be considering the other person. And the end goal is to make sure that their life is as anxiety-free as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of our jobs as IT support, is to address the data, address if we're also supporting computer systems or infrastructure or cloud infrastructure, making sure that we're handling updates, making sure that we're planning for new sprints or new systems, or however we can make sure that they have as little stress as possible, so that we don't have to have those emotional conversations as often.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Hey, Jess, really fun to chat with you on this. And thanks for your insight. It does make me think hard about how we support folks remotely, especially if we're not used to it, to get better at all those things. I hope things keep going well in your world. I appreciate all your effort.
It's been fun. It's one of the things that I'll just end on this is transition is never easy, right? Right. Oftentimes, anytime we're learning, anytime we're being stretched, it can be very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But if we also approach it with excitement, with empathy, with patience, I think it also ultimately becomes very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We grow more under pressure. And that's where I'll then lead everyone to go listen to David Bowie and Queen. Under pressure.
Absolutely. Jess, thanks again for coming back on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard. It's been awesome.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.